Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome back to Tech Talk with me, Dave Williams, here on RNIB Connect Radio. Tech Talk, of course, your regular source of technology, news, reviews and interviews from a blindness perspective. And if you'd like to get in contact with the programme, maybe you've got a suggestion or some feedback, we'd love to hear from you. You can email techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. So joining us this week are co-hosts Callum Stoneman and Tasneem Arshad. Callum, how are you? What's grabbing your attention in the world of tech at the moment?
Yeah, I'm good. I've just got a new phone. So I've got a Pro phone now. So I've been playing around with LiDAR. Yeah, I'm impressed. It's kind of like an advanced camera system that's in the Pro models of the iPhone. So it can help with things like people detection and object detection and door detection, which we've recently found out is coming soon, which I'm very excited about.
Excellent. And Tasneem, what's happening with you?
Yeah, I'm investigating a little bit of old dinosaur technology at the moment. I recently found the old Franklin Master. So I thought I'm just tinkering around with that at the moment and just seeing whether it's operational, how it works. It's not quite the model that I thought it was. So that's kind of interesting. It's fairly ancient, but apparently it's still pretty good. So I'll keep you posted on how I'm getting on with it.
Oh, that the Franklin Language Master, the talking dictionary, that one.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah, that's the one.
I've got one of those. I love that device, and I treasure it. And they don't still make that, do they? Did you buy it new, or did you manage to get it secondhand?
No. This is fairly ancient. It's well secondhand. The person I bought it off bought it secondhand. The model I was thinking of was kind of like a larger model with not much of a keyboard on, but this one sounds like it's more of a later model from what I remember. Yeah, it's got a sort of QWERTY keyboard on it, games and that sort of thing, but I haven't really, it's not quite what I remembered in terms of the model. So yeah, I've not got very far with it at the moment, but I'm planning on having to investigate it a little bit further and see what it does, because it's a little bit different to what I thought it was.
A really fun device, although you might struggle to find selfie and COVID and some more modern words in that dictionary.
That's the one, yeah.
All right, good stuff. Well, welcome in Tasneem and Callum Stoneman. Looking forward to another Tech Talk. Coming up this week on Tech Talk, we'll be speaking with the one and only David Woodbridge, an assistive technology expert from Australia. We've got a review of the Revo keyboard and we'll be answering your emails. That's all to come here on Tech Talk. There's no shortage of smart devices these days. Smart lighting, smart heating. You can even control your kettle with a smart plug. But how about the venerable doorbell? Callum Stoneman's along now with his demonstration of perhaps the market leader, the Ring doorbell.
So let's take a look at the Ring Video doorbell. So this is the doorbell that connects to your Wi-Fi network. And then using the free Ring app on your smartphone, which is fully accessible, it will send you a notification if someone presses the doorbell button or if motion is detected around your front door or a person is detected hanging around your front door, it will send you an alert. And the doorbell has a camera, a speaker and a microphone all built in. So using the app, you can see who's at your door. You can talk to them because it supports two-way audio. So that's very handy for if you've got a delivery, for example, and you're not in, you can just answer the door via the app and say, you know, can you try next door or can you put it around the side or whatever. And also, if you've got a Ring Protect subscription, which I'll tell you more about in a minute, you can then go back and see the footage that's recorded as well. So if, for example, someone rang the doorbell and you had a conversation with them, or if someone was detected hanging around your front door for whatever reason, you can go into the app and review the footage that it recorded, and you can see the video and hear the audio as well. So this comes in various different models. The most common ones are the Ring Video Doorbell 2nd generation, the Ring Doorbell 3 and the Ring Doorbell 4. They are the best ones, or the easiest ones I should say, in terms of ease of use, affordability and ease of installation, because they can run completely wirelessly. There are more advanced ones, such as the Ring Video Doorbell Pro and the Ring Video Doorbell Elite, but they have to be hardwired. Whereas the second generation and the 3 and 4, they can be hardwired if you want. I don't really know how that works, to be honest. I've always just run mine wireless. But, of course, they can also be wireless. Now, Ring themselves have a really, really good buying guide on their website that explains the different features between the various models. But one of them I will mention here is the difference in battery. So the second generation does not have a removable battery pack. So what that means is when the doorbell battery is running low, you would have to remove the entire doorbell, which isn't difficult, but you'd have to take the entire doorbell down and bring that inside and charge it up. Whereas the third generation, well, the Ring Doorbell 3 and the Ring Doorbell 4, they both have removable batteries. And what that means is you can just unscrew the faceplate from the bottom of the doorbell. There's a little quick release button there that you can press, and then that just the battery just slides out, and then you just charge up the battery. So then you can then purchase separately a second battery pack. So rather than your doorbell being offline when the battery's being charged, you could just have one fully charged, ready to go, and then when one gets low, you just take one out, put the other one in, and then your doorbell isn't offline. But there are some other differences as well, relatively minor in my opinion, but as I said, if you just do a Google search for Ring Doorbell Buying Guide, they have a fantastic guide on their website. It's really detailed and very accessible. In terms of installation and getting this set up, depending on your DIY skills, you might want sighted help to install this. I did. But it's not very difficult. It basically just involves drilling a couple of holes, mounting the doorbell over the holes, and then screwing it into place. The one thing you will need sighted help setting up, though, is the what they call motion zones, and that is basically how sensitive you want the motion detection and how far away from your front door you want it to record. And it's important to get those set right, firstly for privacy, because obviously you don't want to be recording your entire street, but also just to customise the alerts that you get, because if you are getting motion alerts every single time someone walks around your street or someone's on the other side of the road and you're getting alerts about it, that's going to quickly get annoying and inconvenient. So you want it ideally just protecting your area, you know, just your driveway. And setting that up is quite visual, so you will want sighted help with that. But once it's set up, the Ring app is extremely accessible. So when it detects motion at your front door or a person, it will send you an alert and either say there is motion at your front door or there is a person at your front door. And you go in there, and I will demo this in a few minutes, but you get a nice little interface with options for muting and unmuting the doorbell's microphone so you can hear what's going on. And there is a little accept button, and when you click that, that will then turn on your phone's microphone so you can speak to the person. The Ring Protect subscription then allows you to save those recordings. So for one device, the Ring Protect subscription is £24 a year, and that will allow you 30 days worth of cloud storage, which means that you can basically go back and review 30 days worth of video footage, and that applies for motion events, rings, which is when someone presses the button, and also live view events as well, because you can also use a feature called Live View, which is where you can go on and see a live feed of what's happening near your doorbell right now. So even if it hadn't detected anything, even if, you know, you hadn't had an alert saying there's someone at your door or a person has been detected or whatever, but let's say you heard a noise outside and you wanted to listen to what was going on, you can just go on to Live View, have a listen or have a watch, and then that event for the duration that you're live would be recorded as well. So what I'm going to do now, I'm going to head outside and we'll trigger an alert. We'll trigger a person detected alert, hopefully. And then you can see what it sounds like and you can see what the app sounds like with VoiceOver. So I'm now stood in my front porch and hopefully a couple of seconds after I step out the front door, it will give me an alert to say a person has been detected. And then we can see what that sounds like. So I'm just head outside. Beautiful Sunday afternoon here.
Rapid ring. Now, rapid ring. There is a person at your front door. Attachment.
There we go. So we've got, there is a person at your front door. And if we double tap on that notification.
Rapid ring. Now, landscape.
So let's put my phone in landscape mode with the charge port to the right.
And if we flick around here, hopefully it's connected.
Starting live view. Speaker off, speaker off.
There
button.
We go. Took a couple of seconds, but we've now got speaker off if I flick to the left.
Accept button.
Accept button.
Hang up button.
And hang up button. So on the screen, we can see the footage. So we should be able to see me stood here. And then if I click the speaker button.
Accept speaker off button selected. Speaker off. Speaker.
What we're hearing now through the phone is what the doorbell is picking up. And it's a little bit delayed because I'm doing a recording. And if I was to press the accept button, which I'm not going to do because it will cause feedback, but that would then allow us to turn on the phone's microphone and then the person stood at the door could hear us as well. So I'm just going to hang up this.
Accept, hang up, button, portrait.
So I've just gone back to the home screen and I'm just going to quickly show you what it sounds like. That was just detecting a person. I'm just going to show you what it sounds like if you actually press the bell. So I'll press that now.
Rapid ring, now, rapid ring, bell, someone is at your front door, attachment.
So the bell itself was doing that chime and then it says bell, a bell emoji, and someone is at your front door. And if I was to go into that notification, we would get the same interface that we saw before. Right, let's get inside and get away from this wind.
Okay, so we're back in the office. So let's now see what it looks like when we go into the app to review that footage. So I've just got my iPhone here, just use Siri to get into Ring. Open Ring.
Ring, hamburger, button.
Now I'm not going to go through the app in a huge amount of detail because I've got the Ring alarm system as well as other security devices with them, so my app will look quite different to how it would if you just had the doorbell. But if we go to the history section, I can just quickly show you this because this does remain the same.
Alarm, history, nothing new, selected, cameras, button.
And now we've got a list of all the events that the doorbell's picked up, and the most recent one.
Today, event history, cell content, front door mystery 29/05/2022-15/06. Actions
go.
Available.
So it tells you the date, the time. It says event history cell content before every one of them. I don't really know why. But that's the missed ring. So that's when I press the bell. And it says missed because we didn't answer it in the app. If we flick to the right, we've got a more options
button.
I'll show you those in a second. You can also get to those exact same options via the actions on the rotor. If we flick one more to the right.
Event history cell content, front door answered motion person 29/05/2022-15/04.
So that's saying there was a person detected and it's saying that we answered it as well. So it's saying that we answered it in the app, which of course we did because you heard me demonstrating the notification. So if I double tap on that.
Close button.
It takes a few seconds to load, but it will then start playing this footage. I'll just turn the volume up. There we go. So we've got there is a person at the front door. And if we double tap on that notification. There you go. And that's exactly what it recorded.
The 29th close button.
Door tap close to get out of that.
Back button.
I mentioned the different options you've got available that you can do with the footage. So if I just go
event history cell content front door mystery 29/05/.
If I just go back to that ring, if I do a flick down with one finger,
delete.
You can delete it.
Share.
You can share it.
Star.
Star, which is kind of like bookmarking.
Activate default.
And then back to activate. So you can share a link to the footage if you ever needed to. So you can just send that as a text or an email to someone. They can click that link and then they can view just the video that you sent them. It doesn't give them full access to your doorbell, but it does give them just the video that you sent. You can also add someone as a shared user as well if you did want to give someone access to your entire doorbell, so all the footage that it picks up, and they could receive the notifications as well. So you can do that if you wanted to, or you can just share a one-off video however you like. If you're an eagle-eared listener, you might have noticed that when we got the notifications, it said Rapid Ring and not Ring. Rapid Ring is another kind of companion app. It's official, it's by Ring, and that's also free in the App Store. The Ring app is where you can obviously review your footage, as you've just seen. You can view all your settings and you can change your motion zones. You can see all your other devices in there. Rapid Ring, there's none of that. It's literally just for viewing the live footage from your doorbell or from any other cameras, Ring cameras that you have. And because of that, it's a much lighter app and therefore much snappier. I just find that when I answer the door via the Rapid Ring app compared to the standard Ring, it's just a lot quicker. It connects a lot quicker. There's less buffering, there's less delays. So I highly recommend Rapid Ring as well. The price of these, a bit difficult to say, to be honest, because they kind of vary all the time and they've always got various different sales and bundles and deals and stuff going on that you know, you can get the price a bit cheaper. But at the time of this recording, which is 29th of May, it is £89.99 for the second generation, £134.99 for the three, and £179.99 for the four. So that's the Ring Video Doorbell. This is, I think, one of my favourite smart home devices. It's nice for me having that peace of mind of knowing that if something happens and, you know, I can't, as we've touched on before on Tech Talk, if I can't give a description of them, I can at least share the footage and, you know, show someone the footage. I can share it. I know that it's there and it's recording. And also just the general convenience, you know. If you're out and, you know, you get a delivery, you can speak to them, tell them where to leave it. If someone calls round and you're not in, you can speak to them and explain. And even if, you know, someone comes to the door and you're not really expecting anyone, you can just check who they are from your phone rather than risking opening the door. And that, for me, just makes this well worth having.
Does this appeal to you, Tasneem? Would you get yourself a smart video doorbell so you could find out who's there and talk to them through your smart speaker or your phone?
Yeah, definitely in consideration, actually. So, yeah, I think I would like to investigate this further and, just explore it a little bit more. But I'd also be interested in knowing what other products are on the market that are its equivalent and how accessible they are too. So I'd be quite intrigued to hear your views on that as well.
You can, yeah. So you can have your Amazon Echo do a little announcement when someone presses the doorbell or when motion's detected. And you can also answer the door using your Echo as well. So you can say, you know, Alexa, answer the front door or talk to the front door or whatever you've named your doorbell. And you can, you know, speak to the person through there as well, which personally I've always found that to be a little bit hit and miss, but it's, you know, it's another option. It works well.
Yeah, Ring have done quite a good job, actually, in reinforcing their own brand. I mean, they do seem to be the one that everyone's heard of, and they've got that distinctive chime. You know, it's a bit like if you remember the old adverts for Intel, you know, where they used to have the Intel Inside sound. So, Callum, is Ring the only game in town?
No, absolutely not. There's Nest as well. We went with Ring because of, I think, for that reason, really. They're the one that everyone's heard of. They're the ones that we sort of knew the most about, and they seem the easiest to install. But no, there's Nest as well. They're really popular if you're in the sort of, that's more of in the Google ecosystem. So I think that's got compatibility with the Google Home and smart speakers and things like that, whereas Ring is just the Amazon Echo, because obviously they're owned by Amazon. But I've heard a lot of good things about Nest as well. The Nest Hello range, I believe it's called.
So if you have had any experiences with smart doorbells or any other smart home device, in fact, we'd be really keen to hear all about that here at Tech Talk. Why not drop us a line, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Tasneem and Callum, thank you very much.
In the world of accessible technology, there are some names which are pretty much household names. And David Woodbridge is one of them. He's been around for a very long time. He's done countless demonstrations and reviews of various accessible technology, and he's worked in various roles. And, well, I had the pleasure of catching up with him recently, and I'll let him tell you more about himself. Joining me on Tech Talk today, we've gone international. I'm delighted to be joined by, all the way from Australia, by David Woodbridge. I'm going to restrain myself from doing the accent. David, thanks for joining us. How's it going? How are things in Australia?
I must say I'm extremely well. I'm feeling very relaxed. I've been fighting with my Windows computer most of the day, and I've just come back to my Mac, so I can now bask in the stability of the Mac OS again. So I'm back to normality, and any issue that I've still got is my own problem.
So you work for Vision Australia, and you've done quite a lot of technology-related demonstrations and walkthroughs and stuff. But for those who don't know you, just tell us a bit about your job at Vision Australia and what you do technology related.
Yep. So I've been around for a long time. I've been around for coming up to 32 years in June 4th, to be exact. And along that time period, I've done a lot of different things. So I used to work as what we used to originally call a technology resource officer. So that's where I used to go out and see people at their home, school, or employment and do assistive technology assessments of their equipment. Then I'd write up reports, make recommendations, install the equipment, and then do training on the equipment. So I did that for about 15 years. And then after that, I then spent probably 17 years doing more sort of behind the scenes stuff with evaluating equipment, evaluating websites, evaluating apps, working with Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, and Google, giving feedback about their products, but probably since about 2009, working as sort of like what we tend to call a volunteer accessibility ambassador for Apple. So in general, I help out the main Apple person here in Australia. So if people have got specific questions about the screen reader voiceover across all the Apple product line, then I'm the one that tends to take those queries. Well, since 2009, I've been doing product demos of anything I come across. So if I think it's an okay thing to demo, I like to share it originally on a website. And then I started my davidwoodbr.podbean.com feed back in 2011 to share stuff. And then I started my Talking Tech weekly program at Vision Australia Radio, I think in about 2012. I'm sort of losing track of time now. So that's been every week since 2012. And it's really weird because after 32 years, I just feel like I'm a child in a big toy shop, because any time a new toy comes in, whether it's software or hardware, I still get really excited about it. I'm still extremely enthusiastic. I'm probably more enthusiastic than I was when I first started back in 1990, because the technology has just come a long way. I remember in 2009 laying down 30 items on my dining room table that the iPhone 3GS had replaced. So I had things like talking calculator, talking GPS, talking weather station, talking this, talking that. And it was just amazing the amount of devices that this single smartphone had replaced. Because up till then, you know, we had the good old Nokia with talks on it. Since about 2000, I still remember fondly getting my Nokia Communicator 9210i, which had the little keyboard, and you open it up and that's where the speech was. Unfortunately, when the phone was closed, the outside phone didn't talk. So I feel like I've been in a really privileged position to be able to get paid to test and share information with customers, not just in Australia but across the world, on stuff to do with, you know, currently smart home technology, what Windows is doing, what Microsoft's doing, my very late excitement about Android, of course, what Apple has always done, and then back in the early days with, you know, MS-DOS, Windows 3.1, IBM OS 2, the operating system with the home screen reader for IBM. And I was looking at the other day, because I just kept this list. But it looks like I've evaluated and tested about 900 different bits and pieces over the last 32 years. And I thought, you know, the fact that I get paid to enjoy myself, to not only install, train, and recommend equipment, but I also am allowed to actually test and give feedback to the developers and manufacturers of all these different types of technologies. So, you know, it's been a real buzz to me to still, after, you know, 3.2 decades, that my, you know, my contribution to Vision Australia is still valued, and the fact that I still get people downloading my demos.
It sounds like the enthusiasm for technology has just been all of your life, really. Was there a specific thing that sort of came along or something that happened that really showed you, like, yes, you know, technology is where I want to go in my career?
Well, it's interesting because I know when I went to school, and when I'm talking about going to school, I'm talking about the late 1970s. So, you know, I feel like I'm getting older and older. But basically, I got told at the time, and this was probably in sort of Australian school times, this was probably 2 years before you graduate to go to university. And I got told that I didn't have the aptitude for computer science or technology in general. So I ended up doing social work because they felt back at the time was like, yeah, that was a nice job for a blind person doing social work, with active listening and empathy and communicating and blah, blah, blah. So then I got a job doing drug and alcohol counselling, and in about the third year of doing crisis counselling, there was a nun at the place I was working, and she said, would you like to come up and spend some more time helping me configure the PDP 11 mini mainframe upstairs? Because at that point, I couldn't access the mini mainframe for the database. And then while we're setting up there, we went, well, hang on a minute. Why don't we look at the issue about me not being able to access the mainframe as a bit of a problem to be resolved? And as we found out back in those days, if I linked up a DeckTalk classic synthesizer, which is the big, huge one at the time, I think it was literally about like 2.5 feet square or something, then we could pipe information from that, from the PDP-11 terminal, and send text strings to it. So there was a research place next to it called the Garvan Institute that did all sorts of amazing things. There was this whiz bang computer guy there. He actually wrote a program at the time which allowed me to interrogate or read 24 lines of the screen and then also be able to read back information on particular parts of those lines. So back in the day, that was in 1983, that was a very basic form of what we now call a screen reader. And I was able, so I finally rang up and said, look, because it was drug and alcohol, I really feel I need to go into a rehab or a detox unit. I could then look that up on the database myself independently without having to put myself on hold and ask somebody for it. And it was fantastic. And actually 3 years later, when I got an Apple IIe with a terminal program called ProTerm, I was able to then download the whole database from the PDP-11 and I actually updated the whole database for them. So that was actually quite exciting. So that sort of gave me the interest of saying, well, if I'm really good at sort of thinking out of the box and giving solutions, wouldn't it be nice if I could get a job that allowed me to problem solve and then solve people's issues by going through the possible solutions? And in 1990, I was actually rang up by then the Royal Blind Society of New South Wales, now Vision Australia, and they said, would you like to go for the job? And very embarrassingly, I hate it when you look back on your 26-year-old self, because I got in there as a bit of a smart aleck, techie, geeky guy, and I thought, God, if I was interviewing myself now, I would have kicked myself out of the door, because I was really giving the interviewers a really hard time because I had no idea what they were talking about. But I thought, shouldn't I have been at least a bit polite about, going for an interview? Because I can remember the exact question that I thought, God, you're an idiot. Because they said, what MS-DOS commands do you know? And, of course, me being a smart aleck, I said, do you mean the internal ones or the external ones that are actually on the hard drive that you call up when you give a command? And I thought, what an absolute ratbag. But I still got the job, so I've been in whatever jobs for the last 32 years. But I'm really am grateful, and my wife keeps telling me to stop buying things, but I think she's just realised that when I get excited about a piece of technology, there's just no stopping me. I sort of have to get my hands on it and then share it. So, if a new piece of technology comes out, I normally get asked by people, have you bought it yet? And most of the time I say, yes, I have.
David Woodbridge, and we'll be hearing more from him later on. He's an interesting guy, Tasneem, isn't he?
Amazing, actually. Yeah, a complete legend, I think. I really like his style, the fact that he's very knowledgeable about assistive technology. Obviously, he's been around for a very long time and very well known. Really enjoy his sort of podcasts and his reviews on things, and just an amazing source of information. So yeah, I really enjoy, hearing what he has to say.
Still to come on Tech Talk, we'll be answering your emails, and we've got a review of the Revo keyboard.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet RNIB Radio using the hashtag #AskTechTalk.
When it comes to writing on a touchscreen, we have a number of options. There is, of course, the on-screen QWERTY keyboard, which I don't know about you, I always find particularly challenging. And then the joys of dictation. I remember once sending a message to a friend and I wanted to say, I owe you a fiver. And I think it was Siri that said, do you want to say, I owe you a Eurofighter? So I just said, send. One device that might help with text entry on your iPhone is a tiny, handy-dandy little keyboard made by Revo. And our very own Tasneem Arshad caught up with Steve Nutt to find out more.
To start off with, I think it'd be really helpful, Steve, if you could give us a summary of your background, especially for people who don't know who you are, because you're a bit of a legend in the tech industry.
I wouldn't say that, but I went to school at Linden Lodge, which is in Wimbledon. I'm completely blind, have no sight, never had any sight. Worked for an insurance company from 1981 to 96, got made redundant. And in that role, I was a network administrator and a typist and a computer programmer. And then from 96, I started my own business in October 96. So we've been going about 25 years, something like that.
Wow.
So as Computer Room Services, which started up as training and braille transcription and various other bits. And then we started selling stuff for the blind that I found we couldn't get anywhere else in the UK. So RNIB didn't sell it. Nobody else sold it. And now we just tend to sell any equipment that we think works well, because my wife is almost completely blind as well. So Angie is almost total. She can see colour, but not a lot else. And so anything that works well for us, then we try and bring it in. And that's really me in a nutshell. And that's where the Revo comes from, which is what we were going to talk about.
What does Revo stand for? So it's spelt Romeo, India, Victor, Oscar, isn't it?
Yes, yes. So it stands for Remote Interface to VoiceOver, because it started off as an iPhone-only product. And then it became... You bought one for iPhone and you bought a separate keyboard for Android, and now the two are merged. So you combine the one keyboard and it connects to both devices, Android and iOS, and you can connect to up to six devices with it. So you can connect to iPads, iPhones, Android phones, Apple Watch, all kinds of things like that. So that's where Revo comes from. To describe it, basically, it's a regular telephone style keypad. So it's 1 to 90 star and hash. And on the left-hand side, you've got four function keys. And on the right-hand side, you've got four function keys, which are referred to L1 to L4 and R1 to R4, which is left and right.
Yeah.
And that's all there is to it, basically. And then you've got a couple of switches on it to do various things, which it can do, which I think is quite unique for a Bluetooth keyboard, because it not only is a Bluetooth keyboard, but it has a speaker in it as well. This means that you can take phone calls on it. So if your keyboard is connected to the phone and you get a phone call, you can press number 5 on your keyboard and it'll answer the phone. And then you can dial numbers while you're on a call, which is sometimes difficult on a touch screen.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do things like that. So you don't even have to get the phone out of your pocket or your bag. You can just take your phone call on the speakers of the Revo.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing Revo brings to the table, which is fairly unique as well, is... it has a headphone socket. And so for people who like, you know, wired headphones, a lot of phones come now without headphone sockets.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you can, especially now, I mean, you know, Android and iPhones, they both come, a lot of them, without headphone sockets. So now when you connect them up, when you connect the keyboard and the phone, you can plug a pair of headphones into the keyboard and the phone's sound will be routed to those wired headphones in high quality. So you can even listen to stereo on them and things like that. So those are kind of all the unique things about the Revo. It has different modes. So it's quite complex to learn because it has a mode for navigation, for example. So if you're in navigation mode, then keys 4 and 6 on the regular phone keypad, if you like, become... flick left and flick right, you know, normal swipes.
Yeah.
Key 5 is double tap, and the other keys do various things, like key 1, I think, gets you to the top of the screen, and key 7 to the bottom, and various things like that. So that's navigation mode. And then we've got media mode, and then keys 4 and 6 become previous and next track if you're playing a track, and key 5 becomes play pause etc. And then we've got phone mode, which is where you can dial a number on a call, you know, like press one to do this, press two to do that. And then finally, you've got typing mode. And in typing mode, there are two modes of typing. One is the regular, what they call the old T9 method. So two is ABC, three is DEF, four is GHI, and so on.
Yeah.
And the other one is a special mode, which I can't really describe. It was made up by Revo, and they claim that the most common letters are on the keys first. So number two has E on it, for example, rather than D. And I could never get my head around that mode, so I always have it in regular T9 mode, because that's what happened when you had the old Nokia phones. You know, you use T9 to dial. So that's all the different modes that the Revo can do. And it also vibrates for various things as well. So it has a vibrate motor in the keyboard. And when you turn it on, it vibrates, for example, four times if you've got 100% battery, three times if you've got 75, twice if you've got 50, and one if you've got 25. And if it's below one, you need to plug it in. It seems to last about 3 months on a charge, so you can use it for about... That's my usage. I can't be absolutely certain about that. But it usually lasts about 3 months on a charge, and then, you know, you recharge it again. And that, in a nutshell, is the Revo.
Well, it sounds very impressive, and it sounds like it's got some really good features that would be particularly helpful for people who have sight loss.
Indeed.
So you said it's got a 3 month charge. I mean, how heavy is your usage on it, Steve?
Well, I've tested it with about, you know, 4 or 5 hours a day, something like that. You know, but I mean, I can't be certain, because you just get it out of your pocket when you use it. You know.
Yeah.
So I always leave it on and in standby. So as soon as I get it out of my pocket and touch a key, it wakes up the phone. If you've got a pin on your phone, you type in the pin on the Revo and it'll unlock the phone as well.
Yeah.
So you don't even have to get the phone out of your pocket to unlock it.
Yeah, that's something I really like about it, actually, because it gives you that privacy, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Because no one can see your screen, even if your screen's turned on.
Yeah.
Nobody can see it because your phone's in your pocket or your bag.
Yeah, I really like that aspect of it. And especially the whole old style of the T9, I think you called it, which is, you know, the old Nokia style way of texting.
Mm-hmm.
That is really impressive, because I think, you know, I struggle using the online keyboard.
Yeah.
And I usually dictate the sort of longer messages and shorter messages I type out. But the time that it takes to do that is quite consuming.
Yeah.
And I think having something like the Revo sounds completely ideal, actually, for myself and anybody who is new to a smartphone. I think it's a real advantage for them to kind of get into it slowly by using something like the Revo keyboard, because of the features that you've described, but also the fact that it's quite small, it's portable, it's got a really good charge on it. And anybody sort of who's thinking about dipping their toes into using a smartphone, this actually would be quite a nice way of transitioning to that. What do you think about that?
And yeah, indeed, absolutely. And talking of voice dictation, if you want to do voice dictation on the Revo, because the Revo's got a microphone built into it as well, because I said to earlier, it takes calls as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just hold down zero and speak, and you can do your voice input from Revo as well.
That's brilliant. And you said that it actually can plug into both Android and iOS devices.
Yes.
So is that kind of at the same time then?
No. It'll connect to one device, and then you do a key combination which will make it switch to the other device. So it can store up to 6 different devices, and you can switch to each device. So if you've got a phone and a tablet, or you've got 2 phones, you can literally switch with a key press on the Revo to the other device, and then use the other device and then switch back.
Brilliant. Yeah. That sounds really, really good. And thank you so much for joining us on Tech Talk and for giving us this product review.
You're welcome.
The Revo keyboard there. Tasneem, how do we get one?
Well, it's available from Computer Room Services, so directly from Steve Nutt, and also you can buy it directly from the manufacturer, so Revo.me.
And the price?
£250.
Goodness, that seems like a lot for a keyboard, but I suppose if it works for you, it works for you. What works for you, Callum?
Personally, I love the Braille screen input mode on iOS, because I hate the touchscreen keyboard. The way of typing on the QWERTY keyboard, I can do it, but yeah, it's just too slow, and I kind of miss the Flick Type app, to be honest, but
Braille screen input works for me, and you know, you've got the advantage of your handy little grade 2 Braille symbols there if you're a Braille user. But I can see this being really good if you're not a Braille user, or if you don't get on with that input mode. I know it took me a long time to get the hang of it, and it does sound cool. I miss the good old T9 keypad.
Yeah, and it sounds tiny as well. That's the thing, you know, it will easily go into a pocket.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? With a Bluetooth keyboard, for example, it's all right. It's all well and good being able to type fast, but it's still another device to carry around and, you know, try and get out and connect and all that. So if you've got something that's card-sized or pocket-sized, yeah, fantastic.
Tasneem Arshad, thank you so much for that review. And as always, good to get your reaction as well, Callum. You're listening to RNIB Tech Talk. We love to receive your emails here at Tech Talk, and Reg has been in touch and wants to know, how did Tasneem resolve her JAWS issue? Now, JAWS obviously is a popular commercial screen reader for Microsoft Windows. Tasneem, just remind us, what was your JAWS issue?
Well, JAWS was being incredibly sluggish. Speech was really being slowed down and crashing. It would eventually boot me out of the Microsoft Word or the Outlook, and I would have to restart my computer to get everything back. So as you can imagine, in a work situation, that was pretty dire.
Grr, that sounds horrible. So is there a solution?
Absolutely there is. That's the good news. So yes, Sight and Sound and Tristam in particular helped resolve the issue. And it took about 10 steps and a few settings changed on the sound card. And we eventually figured out that it's a common sound card issue with Dell machines. It absolutely can be resolved. And if you're in a secure setting, then you would need administrative rights to do that.
Okay, so anybody who wants to get that sorted, then they should contact Tristam at Sight and Sound.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. Okay, let us know how you get on with that, folks. Now, we've also heard from Andrew McKay. Now, he's cottoned on to the fact that you work for BT, Callum. And so Andrew wants to know, the BT TV, is that accessible?
Well, I would say it's not very accessible, to be honest. It does have your standard audio description available, and you can change things like, there are options in the menus for high contrast, and you can change the colours of certain features, such as, you know, the TV guide, and you can have beeps as well, so it can beep at you when it detects a button press on your remote. But in terms of other more advanced features, such as a screen reader, no, it doesn't have that. And I don't see that coming anytime soon, unfortunately.
Okay, so a little bit of a mixed bag there. Callum and Tasneem, thank you very much. And if you have a question for Tech Talk, do drop us a line, that email address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. In the second part of Callum's interview now with David Woodbridge, the assistive technology specialist from Australia, we explore the differences between mainstream versus specialist assistive technology.
I know we could have the debate all day about specialist assistive technology versus mainstream, but do you find that mainstream is the best way to go because you've got loads of different systems?
Absolutely, yeah. So I've always tried to go mainstream. I just always had this built-in scepticism of how far assistive tech will actually be around for, or how long it will last, depending on particular products. So I've always tried to, as soon as some sort of mainstream thing comes along that I think is going to be accessible, then I tend to jump on the bandwagon. So I've been with, you know, the Xbox since Narrator started. Of course, I've been with the Apple TV when it first came out, VoiceOver. The same with the Apple Watch. I think the only real piece of assistive technology I've got a few of them, I guess, now I'm thinking about it. I've got several different types of Braille displays. So I've got a 20 cell and a 32 cell. I've always liked the Victor Reader Stream. So, I've got one of those for existing Daisy books and Audible, and also here in Australia, the Vision Australia Library, and a few other odds and ends. But no, literally, this room that I'm currently sitting in, so I've got my standing desk that I'm currently standing at. I've got my testing desk right next to me. And then on the wall in front of me, I've got 2 4-meter shelves just full of tech. So that when I am asked to test stuff for Android, Windows, Mac and Apple, then I've got all the stuff here. I've got, you know, I've got keyboard, large print keyboards, I've got Bluetooth keyboards, I've got headsets, I've got Bluetooth speakers, I've got wired speakers, I've got mixers, braille, like I said, braille displays, I've got different types of MP3 players, all that sort of stuff. So, and like this stuff hasn't sort of like magically vanished or sorry, appeared overnight. This stuff has accumulated over, you know, in some cases, one of my braille displays I bought in 2004 and it's still going as a USB braille display now. And I've still got some accessible like blood pressure monitors and that sort of stuff. But as smart technology became more online in, say, 2015 and onwards, then some of the dedicated talking stuff, so the dedicated talking blood pressure monitor, it's now replaced with a smart device blood pressure monitor. As things become more mainstream, I haven't had to buy any assistive technology that sort of like it or replace anything with it or buy something different. And that's what I try and recommend to people. I say, well, look, yes, you can get, you know, can get a talking bathroom scale or you can get a talking this and talking that. And if you're comfortable with that, that's absolutely fine. Nobody says you have to use smart tech. But if you want the ability to be able to go back and look at your data, so you want to look at your weight trends or how your heart's been going or your oxygen levels when you've been exercising, et cetera, then that's where all the smart tech comes in handy, because normally a lot of the talking stuff, like the talking blood pressure monitor, the talking bathroom scales and that sort of stuff, they just give you the information at the time. They don't store any data. They don't share any data. So at least with all the mainstream stuff, you can go back and quickly work out that, you know, your sleep patterns drop by, you know, I don't know, 45 minutes a day. Your oxygen levels are decreasing or your overall heartbeat's increased or decreased. And I just love the fact that now we can go back and, or I can go back and look at my data and really look at how my well-being's going over the last, you know, day, month, week, year, and just see how you're going in general. So it's a really great way of also looking after your well-being. Because I know with COVID over the last, what's it now, up to 3rd year now, as we do the recording, then I think being able to look after your mental health and your physical well-being is really, really important these days.
I guess that's the thing, isn't it, is that obviously these devices do, you know, as you said, no one's saying they don't have their place, but I guess nowadays the devices themselves don't have to have a screen reader or text-to-speech built in. It's just, as long as they work with an accessible app or with a smart speaker or something, then that's all you need. That's, you know, pretty much accessible, apart from maybe the setup process or maybe one or two things. But other than that, it's fully accessible from things like VoiceOver or TalkBack or whatever you choose to be using.
Exactly. And I saw a really interesting article a week or so ago. They were recommending that you don't buy a smart TV. You buy the dumbest TV you can get your hands on, because the likelihood of the TV being upgraded as far as apps are concerned is probably less than buying a cheap $100 device like an Amazon Fire TV stick, a Google Chrome TV, an Apple TV for being updated than is buying another smart TV. So here in my, and I always call this office the toy room, because when my kids were young, it was always referred to as a toy room because that's where all the toys, what the toys were. And I thought, well, now my children are sort of, my youngest ones are 17, 18, and they've got like PlayStations, the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox. It's still a toy room. So, and Dad plays with tech, so it's still effectively a toy room. But here in the toy room, I've got a very dumb 24-inch television, and plugged into that, I've got my Google TV, my Amazon TV stick, and my Apple TV, which means all the services that I need to access, like Amazon Prime, Netflix, YouTube, and so on, they're on all those devices, which are inherently accessible. And when I go back and look at my other device that I've also got in the toy room on the other side of the room, which is the Spot TV, which was a Samsung one, that a 49-inch TV that I bought in 2015, its overall accessibility has decreased because Samsung hasn't updated the operating system, which means the accessibility of the built-in apps like Netflix, and some of the commercial station apps here in Australia are not fantastic for navigating. I still get the ability to be able to, you know, find out what the channel is, the channel information, the program information, but that's, and then when I change sources from, you know, the, its own plugged-in Apple TV, Xbox, PlayStation, that's all fine. But on the other hand, what I do with my dumb TV, I've only got one HDMI port. So when I turn the TV on, it's by default, it's on HDMI 1. So I just plug in the appropriate device. Hey, presto, off I go. So I'm sort of getting to the stage now where I think, geez, I don't know. I'd really love to look at a new Sony TV with its own screen reader or Android TV with TalkBack on it. But then I think, well, do I really need to? Because my dumb TV is giving me this amazing accessibility with the devices. So I know, for example, if Amazon brings out a new Fire TV stick this year, or Google does, or anybody else does, I'll just buy a stick for, you know, $90 Australian or whatever it is, plug it into the HDMI port, off I go, bother your uncle. So I don't effectively need to buy a brand new smart TV. So, because the other reason I'm talking about it today too is because we've got a 65-inch TV in our lounge room, which sadly has been going absolutely perfectly for about 18 years. And I keep thinking, listen here, television, don't you sort of want to sort of like, I don't know, just say it's the end of the day, start fading off, start irritating my sighted wife who can't see the screen quite well, because then I could really buy a really cool Sony TV. So, but I'm sort of in two minds between, you know, the coolness of having a smart TV, but then the coolness of having a dumb TV that you can just plug things into.
You do realise your wife is going to be very suspicious now if that TV suddenly breaks.
No, I don't. Yeah, what do you mean you can't see the middle of the screen anymore? That's a bit of a shame, isn't it? Jeez, we'll have to go and buy a new one.
For people who are completely new to this, you know, maybe they're new to technology or they've recently lost their sight, what would be your starting points? I mean, we mentioned earlier about, you know, mainstream technology. What's already there, you know, that people can start using straight away with something that they might already have?
Yeah, look, I think find an organisation that can give you training on how to use a computer effectively. And when I mean a computer, I'm really talking about a desktop or laptop, and probably Windows, because Windows is more prevalent than a Mac and more people understand it both from an assistive technology point of view and a mainstream point of view. So I always say Windows. And one of the major things that I always find to get people to learn how to do, particularly in on a computer, is learn how to use keyboard and keyboard shortcuts. Because people sort of get scared off by the fact that, you know, they've got to learn the computer, they've got to learn the application, and they've got to learn the screen reader. Half the time, if you know how to use the keyboard shortcuts on your Windows computer, you can get away for a while not having to worry about too many screen reader commands. So using how to use the computer from the keyboard is absolutely critical. Touch typing is absolutely critical. And if you must, yes, you can buy a large print stickers to, or you can buy large print keyboards if you need to look at it. Gradually wean yourself off the mouse, or make the mouse pointer bigger. But I just sometimes think if you're gradually losing your sight, then the better you can use the keyboard and focus on, you know, perhaps what the large print is showing you, what the actual speech is showing you, is a good benefit. And I think as far as smartphones and tablets are concerned, I'd still go with the Apple, so the iPhone and the iPad. And I think with those in particular, you really do need somebody who's familiar with VoiceOver if you're going for the speech component, because what the sighted person will say to you is completely different to the way that VoiceOver, of course, talks to the iPhone and the iPad. So you can touch the screen, you can drag your finger around it, you can flick left and right. Whatever speaks last is the active area. It's not just whatever else is on the iPad screen. And some sighted people don't get that. So they're trying to train you from a sighted person view. You're saying this is not working. They can't quite tell what's happening with VoiceOver. So I always say to people, it's really important that, and I guess this goes for both Windows as well, that you get somebody who knows what they're doing with the assistive technology. Because I know sometimes sighted people get a bit frustrated and they think, geez, if I just did it for you, it'd be a lot faster. So let me grab the mouse, or I'll just tap through on the iPhone or the iPad. So you really need somebody to sit back and go, Look, together we'll actually find how to navigate Windows, access your email, do a bit of web processing, navigate some websites, the same on the iPhone or the iPad. And to me, there is no stupid computer user. There is always a computer user that's learning new things, needs a bit of help through the way, and then, you know, can get there eventually. And it might take a little bit of extra teaching, extra challenges, extra tasks to do, but it's not hard. And I can remember when I first got the iPhone 3GS, when it first came back out in July 2009, back then I said to people, please at least give yourself 2 weeks to get familiar with using this touch screen. It's a flat piece of glass, using the screen where we're flicking left and right and one finger double tapping, because I can guarantee initially you'll feel like throwing the thing out the window. You'll think it's not worth it. Side of people around you will go, oh no, it's too hard for you to use. And what they're really saying, it's too hard for them to use, not for you to use. So I just say to people, look, be patient. Don't think you can do what you want to do within the first week or two. Give yourself enough time, be nice to yourself, be patient, and you will get there eventually. And places like the Microsoft Accessibility Help Desk that you can ring up, the Apple Accessibility Help Desk, or here in Australia, Vision Australia, or in the UK, RNIB, there are these help desks where you can ring up and ask for assistance. And of course, you can also ask people to come out and set up your computer appropriately for you, and also give you support and training on how to use the product. And then, of course, where to get more resources, audio demos, and that sort of stuff on how to keep moving forward with the product.
Really interesting. Really good advice. David, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thanks so much for coming on. Hopefully we'll be hearing more from you on the Tech Talk as well.
Indeed. But for now, thanks for listening to me.
David Woodbridge there with Callum Stoneman, and I certainly hope that's not the last time we hear from David here on Tech Talk. Next time, we'll be looking at travel and how apps can facilitate independent access to travel for those of us who are blind and partially sighted. Don't forget, we always love to receive your emails. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our address. But for this time on Tech Talk, that's it. From Callum Stoneman.
Bye for now.
And Tasnee Marshad.
Bye for now.
And from me, Dave Williams. Bye-bye.